Brian when she was no more than a girl playing at her father's knee in Evenfall Hall, and I knew her still better when the Evenstar sent her here to Storm's End. She loved Renly Baratheon. From the first moment she laid eyes on him, a blind man could see it. To be sure, declared Lord Florent airily, and she would scarcely be the first maid maddened to murder by a man who spurned her. Though for my own part, I believe it was Lady Stark who slew the king. She had journeyed all the way from Riverrun to plead for an alliance, and Renly had refused her. No doubt she saw him as a danger to her son, and so removed him. It was Brian, insisted Lord Caron. Sir Eamon Kai swore as much before he died. You have my oath on that, Sir Courtney. Contempt thickened Sir Courtney's voice. And what is that worth? You wear your cloak of many colours, I see. The one Renly gave you when you swore your oath to protect him. If he is dead, how is it you are not? He turned his scorn on Gaillard Morrigan. I might ask the same of you, sir. Gaillard the Green, yes? Of the Rainbow Guard, sworn to give his own life for his king's? If I had such a cloak, I would be ashamed to wear it. Morrigan bristled. Be glad this is a parley, Penrose, or I would have your tongue for those words. And cast it in the same fire where you left your manhood. Enough, Stannis said. The Lord of Light willed that my brother die for his treason. Who did the deed matters not. Not to you, perhaps, said Sir Courtney. I have heard your proposal, Lord Stannis. Now here is mine. He pulled off his glove and flung it full in the king's face. Single combat. Sword, lance, or any weapon you care to name. Or if you fear to hazard your magic sword and royal skin against an old man, name you a champion, and I shall do the same. He gave Gaillard Morrigan and Bryce Caron a scathing look. Either of these pups would do nicely, I should think. Sir Gaillard Morrigan grew dark with fury. I will take up the gage if it please the king. As would I. Bryce Caron looked to Stannis. The king ground his teeth. No. Sir Courtney did not seem surprised. Is it the justice of your cause you doubt, my lord, or the strength of your arm? Are you afraid I'll piss on your burning sword and put it out? You take me for an utter fool, sir, asked Stannis. I've 20,000 men. You are besieged by land and sea. Why would I choose single combat when my eventual victory is certain? The king pointed a finger at him. I give you fair warning. If you force me to take my castle by storm, you may expect no mercy. I will hang you for traitors, every one of you. As the gods will it, bring on your storm, my lord, and recall, if you do, the name of this castle. Sir Courtney gave a pull on his reins and rode back toward the gate. Stannis said no word, but turned his horse around and started back towards his camp. The others followed. If we storm these walls, thousands will die, fretted ancient Lord Estamont, who was the king's grandfather on his mother's side. Better to hazard but a single life, surely. Our cause is righteous, so the gods must surely bless our champion's arms with victory. God, old man, thought Davos. You forget, we have only one now, Melisandre, Lord of Light. Sir John Fosaway said, I would gladly take this challenge myself, though I'm not half the swordsman Lord Caron is, or Sir Gaillard. Renly left no notable knights at Storm's End. Garrison duty is for old men and green boys. Lord Caron agreed. An easy victory, to be sure. And what glory to win Storm's End with a single stroke. Stannis raked them all with a look. You chatter like magpies, and with less sense. I will have quiet. The king's eyes fell on Davos. Sir, ride with me. He spurred his horse away from his followers. Only Melisandre kept pace, bearing the great standard of the fiery heart with the crowned stag within. As if it had been swallowed whole. Davos saw the looks that passed between the lordlings as he rode past them to join the king. These were no onion knights, but proud men from houses whose names were old in honor. Somehow he knew that Renly had never chided them in such a fashion. The youngest of the Baratheons had been born with a gift for easy courtesy that his brother sadly lacked. He eased back to a slow trot when his horse came up beside the king's. Your Grace. Seen at close hand, Stannis looked worse than Davos had realized from afar. His face had grown haggard, and he had dark circles under his eyes. A smuggler must be a fair judge of men, the king said. What do you make of Sir Courtney Penrose? A stubborn man, said Davos carefully. Hungry for death, I call it. He throws my pardon in my face. Aye, and throws his life away in the bargain, and the lives of every man inside those walls. Single combat, tchah! The king snorted in derision. No doubt he mistook me for Robert. More like he was desperate. What other hope does he have? None. The castle will fall. But how to do it quickly? Stannis brooded on that for a moment. Under the steady clop-clop of hooves, Davos could hear the faint sound of the king grinding his teeth. Lord Alistair urges me to bring old Lord Penrose here, Sir Courtney's father. You know the man, I believe. When I came as your envoy, Lord Penrose received me more courteously than most, Davos said. He's an old done man, sire, sickly and failing. Florent would have him fail more visibly, in his son's sight, with a noose about his neck. It was dangerous to oppose the Queen's men, but Davos had vowed always to tell his king the truth. I think that will be ill done, my liege. Sir Courtney will watch his father die before he would ever betray his trust. It would gain us nothing and bring dishonor to our cause. What dishonor? Stannis bristled. Would you have me spare the lives of traitors? You have spared the lives of those behind us. Do you scold me for that, smuggler? It is not my place. Davos feared he had said too much. The king was relentless. You esteem this Penrose more than you do my lord's bannermen. Why? He keeps faith. A misplaced faith in a dead usurper. Yes, Davos admitted, but still he keeps faith. As those behind us do not. Davos had come too far with Stannis to play coy now. Last year, they were Robert's men. A moon ago, they were Renly's. This morning, they are yours. Whose will they be on the morrow? And Stannis laughed, a sudden gust, rough and full of scorn. I told you, Melisandre, he said to the Red Woman, my Onion Knight tells me the truth. I see you know him well, Your Grace, the Red Woman said. Davos, I've missed you sorely, the king said. Aye, I have a tale of traitors. Your nose does not deceive you. My lord's bannermen are inconstant, even in their treasons. I need them, but you should know how it sickens me to pardon such as these when I have punished better men for lesser crimes. You have every right to reproach me, Sir Davos.
You reproach yourself more than I ever could, Your Grace. You must have these great lords to win your throne.
Fingers and all, it seems, Stannis smiled grimly. Unthinking, Davos raised his maimed hand to the pouch at his throat and felt the finger bones within.
Look.
The king saw the motion. Are they still there, Onion Knight? You have not lost them?
No.
Why do you keep them? I've often wondered.
They remind me of what I was, where I came from. They remind me of your justice, my liege.
It was justice, Stannis said. A good act does not wash out the bad, nor a bad act the good. Each should have its own reward. You are a hero and a smuggler. He glanced behind at Lord Florent and the others, rainbow knights and turncloaks who were following at a distance. These pardon lords would do well to reflect on that. Good men and true will fight for Joffrey, wrongly believing him the true king. A Northman might even say the same of Robb Stark. But these lords, who flocked to my brother's banners, knew him for a usurper. They turned their backs on their rightful king for no better reason than dreams of power and glory, and I have marked them for what they are.
Pardon them, yes, forgiven, but not forgotten. He fell silent for a moment, brooding on his plans for justice. And then abruptly he said, What do the small folk say of Renly's death?
They grieve. Your brother was well loved.
Fools love a fool, grumbled Stannis, but I grieve for him as well. For the boy he was, not the man he grew to be. He was silent for a time, and then he said, How did the commons take the news of Cersei's incest?
While we were among them, they shouted for King Stannis. I cannot speak for what they said once we had sailed.
So you do not think they believed?
When I was smuggling, I learned that some men believe everything and some nothing. We met both sorts. And there is another tale being spread as well.
Yes, Stannis bit off the word. Selyse has given me horns and tied a fool's bell to the end of each. My daughter, fathered by a half-wit jester. A tale as vile as it is absurd. Renly threw it in my teeth when we met to parley. You would need to be as mad as Patchface to believe such a thing.
Or that may be so, my liege. But whether they believe the story or no, they delight to tell it.
In many places, it had come before them, poisoning the well for their own true tale. Robert could piss in a cup and men would call it wine, but I offer them pure cold water, and they squint in suspicion and mutter to each other about how queer it tastes. Stannis ground his teeth. If someone said I had magicked myself into a boar to kill Robert, likely they would believe that as well.
You cannot stop them talking, my liege, Davos said. But when you take your vengeance on your brother's true killers, the realm will know such tales for lies.
Stannis only seemed to half hear him. I have no doubts that Cersei had a hand in Robert's death. I will have justice for him, aye, and for Ned Stark, and John Arryn as well.
And for Renly?
The words were out before Davos could stop to consider them. For a long time, the king did not speak. Then very softly he said, I dream of it sometimes, of Renly's dying. A green tent, candles, a woman screaming, and blood. Stannis looked down at his hands. I was still abed when he died. Your Devon will tell you. He tried to wake me. Dawn was nigh, and my lords were waiting, fretting. I should have been a horse, armored. I knew Renly would attack at break of day. Devon says I thrashed and cried out, but what does it matter? It was a dream. I was in my tent when Renly died, and when I woke, my hands were clean. Sir Davos Seaworth could feel his phantom fingertips start to itch.
Something is wrong here,
the one-time smuggler thought, yet he nodded and said,
I see.
Renly offered me a peach at our parley, mocked me, defied me, threatened me, and offered me a peach. I thought he was drawing a blade and went for mine own. What was his purpose? To make me show fear? Or was it one of his pointless jests? When he spoke of how sweet the peach was, did his words have some hidden meaning? The king gave a shake of his head, like a dog shaking a rabbit to snap its neck. Only Renly could vex me so with a piece of fruit. He brought his doom on himself with his treason. But I did love him, Davos. I know that now. I swear I will go to my grave, thinking of my brother's peach. By then, they were in amongst the camp, riding past the ordered rows of tents, the blowing banners, and the stacks of shields and spears. The stink of horse dung was heavy in the air, mingled with the wood smoke and the smell of cooking meat. Stannis reined up long enough to bark a brusque dismissal to Lord Florent and the others, commanding them to attend him in his pavilion 1 hour hence for a council of war. They bowed their heads and dispersed, while Davos and Melisandre rode to the king's pavilion. The tent had to be large, since it was there his lord's bannerman came to council. Yet there was nothing grand about it. It was a soldier's tent of heavy canvas, dyed the dark yellow that sometimes passed for gold. Only the royal banner that streamed atop the center pole
marked it as a king's. That and the guards without. Queen's men leaning on tall spears, with the badge of the Fiery Heart sewn over their own. Grooms came up to help them dismount. One of the guards relieved Melisande of her cumbersome standard, driving the staff deep into the soft ground. Devon stood to one side of the door, waiting to lift the flap for the king. An older squire waited beside him. Stannis took off his crown and handed it to Devon.
Coldwater, cops for two. Davos, attend me. My lady, I shall send for you when I require you.
As the king commands, Melisande bowed.
After the brightness of the morning, the interior of the pavilion seemed cool and dim. Stannis seated himself on a plain wooden camp stool and waved Davos to another.
One day I may make you a lord, smuggler, if only to irk Celtigar and Florent. You will not thank me, though. It will mean you must suffer through these councils and feign interest in the braying of mules.
Why do you have them, if they serve no purpose?
The mules love the sound of their own braying. Why else? And I need them to haul my cart. Oh, to be sure, once in a great while, some useful notion is put forward. But not today, I think. Ah, here's your son, with our water.
Devon set the tray on the table and filled two clay cups. The king sprinkled a pinch of salt in his cup before he drank. Davos took his water straight, wishing it were wine.
You were speaking of your council. Let me tell you how it will go. Lord Valerian will urge me to storm the castle walls at first light, grapnels and scaling ladders against arrows and boiling oil. The young mules will think this a splendid notion. Estamont will favor settling down to starve them out, as Tyrell and red wine once tried with me. That might take a year, but old mules are patient, and Lord Caron and the others, who like to kick, will want to take up Sir Courtney's gauntlet and hazard all upon a single combat. Each one imagining he will be my champion and win undying fame.
The king finished his water.
What would you have me do, smuggler?
Davos considered for a moment before he answered.
Strike for King's Landing at once.
The king snorted.
And leave Storm's End untaken? Sir Courtney does not have the power to harm you. The Lannisters do. A siege would take too long. Single combat is too chancy, and an assault would cost thousands of lives with no certainty of success. And there is no need. Once you dethrone Joffrey, this castle must come to you with all the rest. It is said about the camp that Lord Tywin Lannister rushes west to rescue Lannisport from the vengeance of the Northmen.
You have a passing clever father, Devon, the king told the boy, standing by his elbow. He makes me wish I had more smugglers in my service, and fewer lords. Though you are wrong in one respect, Davos, there is a need. If I leave Storm's End untaken in my rear, it will be said I was defeated here, and that I cannot permit. Men do not love me as they love my brothers. They follow me because they fear me, and defeat is death to fear. The castle must fall.
His jaw ground side to side. Aye, and quickly. Doran Martell has called his banners and fortified the mountain passes. His Dornishmen are poised to sweep down onto the marches, and Highgarden is far from spent. My brother left the greater part of his power at Bitterbridge, near 60,000 foot. I sent my wife's brother, Sir Errol, with Sir Parman Crane to take them under my command, but they have not returned. I fear that Sir Loras Tyrell reached Bitterbridge before my envoys and took that host for his own.
All the more reason to take King's Landing as soon as we may. Salador San told me.
Salador San thinks only of gold,
Stannis exploded. His head is full of dreams, of the treasure he fancies lies under the Red Keep. So let us hear no more of Salador San. The day I need military counsel from a Lycian brigand is the day I put off my crown and take the black. The king made a fist.
Are you here to serve me, smuggler, or to vex me with arguments?
I am yours, Davos said. Then hear me. Sir Courtney's lieutenant is cousin to the Fossaways. Lord Meadows, a green boy of 20. Should some ill chance strike down Penrose, command of Storm's End would pass to this stripling, and his cousins believe he would accept my terms and yield up the castle. I remember another stripling who was given command of Storm's End. He could not have been much more than 20. Lord Meadows is not as stonehead stubborn as I was. Stubborn or craven, what does it matter? Sir Courtney Penrose seemed hale and hearty to me. So did my brother. The day before his death, the night is dark and full of terrors, Davos. Davos Seaworth felt the small hairs rising on the back of his neck. My lord, I do not understand you. I do not require your understanding, only your service. Sir Courtney will be dead within the day. Melisande has seen it in the flames of the future. His death and the manner of it. He will not die in knightly combat, needless to say. Stannis held out his cup, and Devon filled it again from the flagon. Her flames do not lie. She saw Renly's doom as well. On Dragonstone she saw it, and told Selyse. Lord Valerian and your friend Salador San would have had me sail against Joffrey, but Melisande told me that if I went to Storm's End, I would win the best part of my brother's power. And she was right. Davos stammered. Lord Renly only came here because you had laid siege to the castle. He was marching towards King's Landing before, against the Lannisters. He would have... Stannis shifted in his seat, frowning. Was? Would have? What is that? He did what he did. He came here with his banners and his speeches to his doom. And it was well for me he did. Melisande saw another day in her flames as well. A morrow where Renly rode out of the south in his green armour to smash my host beneath the walls of King's Landing. Had I met my brother there, it might have been me who died in place of him. Or you might have joined your strength to his to bring down the Lannisters, Davos protested. Why not that? If she saw two futures, well, both cannot be true. King Stannis pointed a finger. There you err on your night. Some lights cast more than one shadow. Stand before the night fire, and you see for yourself. The flames shift and dance, never still. The shadows grow tall and short, and every man casts a dozen. Some are fainter than others, that's all. Well, men cast their shadows across the future as well. One shadow or many, Melisande sees them all. You do not love the woman. I know that, Davos. I'm not blind. My lords mislike her too. Estamont thinks the flaming heart ill-chosen and begs to fight beneath the crowned staggers of old. Sir Gaiad says a woman should not be my standard-bearer. Others whisper that she has no place in my war councils, that I ought to send her back to Shai, that it is sinful to keep her in my tent of a night. Aye, they whisper while she serves. Serves? How? Davos asked, dreading the answer. As needed. The king looked at him. And you? I? Davos licked his lips. I am yours to command. What would you have me do? Nothing you have not done before. Only land a boat beneath the castle unseen in the black of night. Can you do that? Yes. Tonight. The king gave a curt nod. You will need a small boat. Not Black Betha. No one must know what you do. Davos wanted to protest. He was a knight now, no longer a smuggler, and he had never been an assassin. Yet when he opened his mouth, the words would not come. This was Stannis, his just lord, to whom he owed all he was, and he had his sons to consider as well.
God be good. What has she done to him?
You are quiet, Stannis observed.
And should remain so, Davos told himself. But instead he said, My liege, you must have the castle. I see that now. But surely there are other ways, cleaner ways. Let Sir Courtney keep the bastard boy
and he may well yield.
I must have the boy, Davos. Must. Melisande has seen that in the flames as well.
Davos groped for some other answer.
Storm's End holds no knight who can match Sir Gaillard or Lord Caron, or any of 100 others sworn to your service. This single combat, could it be that Sir Courtney seeks for a way to yield with honor, even if it means his own life?
A troubled look crossed the king's face, like a passing cloud.
More like he planned some treachery. There will be no combat of champions. Sir Courtney was dead before he ever threw that glove. The flames do not lie, Davos.
Yet they require me to make them true, he thought.
It had been a long time since Davos Seaworth felt so sad.
And so it was that he found himself once more crossing Shipbreaker Bay in the dark of night, steering a tiny boat with a black sail. The sky was the same, and the sea. The same salt smell was in the air, and the water chuckling against the hull was just as he remembered it. 1,000 flickering campfires burned around the castle, as the fires of the Tyrells and Redwynes had 16 years before. But all the rest was different.
The last time it was life I brought to Storm's End, shaped to look like onions. This time it is death, in the shape of Melisande of Ashai.
16 years ago, the sails had cracked and snapped with every shift of wind, until he'd pulled them down and gone on with muffled oars. Even so, his heart had been in his gullet. The men on the red wine galleys had grown lax after so long, however, and they had slipped through the cordon smooth as black satin. This time, the only ships in sight belonged to Stannis, and the only danger would come from watchers on the castle walls. Even so, Davos was taut as a bowstring. Melisande huddled upon a thwart, lost in the folds of a dark red cloak that covered her from head to heels, her face a paleness beneath the cowl. Davos loved the water. He slept best when he had a deck rocking beneath him, and the sighing of the wind in his rigging was a sweeter sound to him than any singer could make with his harp strings. Even the sea brought him no comfort tonight, though.
I can smell the fear on you, Sir Knight,
the Red Woman said softly.
Someone once told me the night is dark and full of terrors. And tonight I am no knight. Tonight I am Davos, the smuggler again. Would that you were an onion.
She laughed.
Is it me you fear, or what we do? What you do? I'll have no part of it.
Your hand raised the sail. Your hand holds the tiller.
Silent, Davos tended to his course. The shore was a snarl of rocks, so he was taking them well out across the bay. He would wait for the tide to turn before coming about. Storm's End dwindled behind them, but the Red Woman seemed unconcerned.
Are you a good man, Davos Seaworth?
She asked.
Would a good man be doing this? I am a man, he said. I am kind to my wife, but I have known other women. I've tried to be a father to my sons, to help make them a place in this world. I've broken laws, but I've never felt evil until tonight. I would say my parts are mixed, milady, good and bad.
A grey man, she said. Neither white nor black, but partaking of both. Is that what you are, Sir Davos?
What if I am? It seems to me that most men are grey.
If half of an onion is black with rot, it is a rotten onion. A man is good, or he is evil.
The fires behind them had melted into one vague glow against the black sky, and the land was almost out of sight. It was time to come about.
Watch your head, milady.
He pushed on the tiller, and the small boat threw up a curl of black water as she turned. Melisande leaned under the swinging yard, one hand on the gunwale, calm as ever. Wood creaked, canvas cracked, and water splashed, so loudly a man might swear the castle was sure to hear. Davos knew better. The endless crash of wave on rock was the only sound that ever penetrated the massive seaward walls of Storm's End, and that but faintly. A rippling wake spread out behind as they swung back toward the shore.
"You speak of men and onions," Davos said to Melisandre. "What of women? Is it not the same for them? Are you good or evil, my lady?"
That made her chuckle.
"Oh, good. I am a knight of sorts myself, sweet sir. A champion of light and life." "Yet you mean to kill a man tonight," he said, "as you killed Maester Cressin."
"Your maester poisoned himself. He meant to poison me, but I was protected by a greater power, and he was not."
"And Renly Baratheon, who was it killed him?"
Her head turned beneath the shadow of the cowl. Her eyes burned like pale red candle flames.
"Not I."
"Liar?"
Davos was certain now. Melisandre laughed again.
"You are lost in darkness and confusion, Sir Davos."
"And a good thing."
Davos gestured at the distant lights flickering along the walls of Storm's End.
"Feel how cold the wind is. The guards will huddle close to those torches. A little warmth, a little light. They're a comfort on a night like this. Yet that will blind them, so they will not see us pass, I hope. The God of Darkness protects us now, my lady, even you."
The flames of her eyes seemed to burn a little brighter at that.
"Speak not that name, sir, lest you draw his black eye upon us. He protects no man, I promise you. He is the enemy of all that lives. It is the torches that hide us. You have said so yourself. Fire, the bright gift of the Lord of Light."
"Have it your way."
"His way, rather."
The wind was shifting. Davos could feel it, see it in the way the black canvas rippled. He reached for the halyards.
"Help me bring in the sail. I'll row us the rest of the way."
Together they tied off the sail as the boat rocked beneath them. As Davos unshipped the oars and slid them into the choppy black waters, he said,
"Who rowed you to Renly?"
"There was no need," she said. "He was unprotected. But here, the Storm's End is an old place. There are spells woven into the stones, dark walls that no shadow can pass, ancient, forgotten, yet still in place."
"Shadow?" Davos felt his flesh prickling. "A shadow is a thing of darkness."
"You are more ignorant than a child, Sir Knight. There are no shadows in the dark. Shadows are the servants of light, the children of fire. The brightest flame casts the darkest shadows."
Frowning, Davos hushed her then. They were coming close to shore once more, and voices carried across the water. He rowed, the faint sound of his oars lost in the rhythm of the waves. The seaward side of Storm's End perched upon a pale white cliff, the chalky stone sloping up steeply to half again the height of the massive curtain wall. A mouth yawned in the cliff, and it was that Davos steered for, as he had 16 years before. The tunnel opened on a cavern under the castle, where the Stormlords of old had built their landing. The passage was navigable only during high tide, and it was never less than treacherous. But his smuggler's skills had not deserted him. Davos threaded their way deftly between the jagged rocks until the cave mouth loomed up before them. He let the waves carry them inside. They crashed around him, slamming the boat this way and that, and soaking them to the skin. A half-seen finger of rock came rushing up out of the gloom, snarling foam, and Davos barely kept them off it with an oar. Then they were past, engulfed in darkness, and the waters smooth. The little boat slowed and swirled. The sound of their breathing echoed until it seemed to surround them. Davos had not expected the blackness. The last time, torches had burned all along the tunnel, and the eyes of starving men had peered down through the murder holes in the ceiling. The portcullis was somewhere ahead, he knew. Davos used the oars to slow them, and they drifted against it almost gently.
This is as far as we go, unless you have a man inside to lift the gate for us.
His whispers scurried across the lapping water like a line of mice on soft pink feet.
Have we passed within the walls?
Yes, beneath, but we can go no farther. The portcullis goes down all the way to the bottom, and the bars are too closely spaced for even a child to squeeze through.
There was no answer, but a soft rustling, and then a light bloomed amidst the darkness. Davos raised a hand to shield his eyes, and his breath caught in his throat. Melisandre had thrown back her cowl and shrugged out of the smothering robe. Beneath, she was naked and huge with child. Swollen breasts hung heavy against her chest, and her belly bulged as if near to bursting.
"God's preserve us,"
he whispered, and heard her answering laugh, deep and throaty. Her eyes were hot coals, and the sweat that dappled her skin seemed to glow with a light of its own. Melisandre shone. Panting, she squatted and spread her legs. Blood ran down her thighs, black as ink. Her cry might have been agony or ecstasy or both, and Davos saw the crown of the child's head push its way out of her. Two arms wriggled free, grasping, black fingers coiling around Melisandre's straining thighs, pushing, until the whole of the shadow slid out into the world and rose taller than Davos, tall as the tunnel, towering above the boat. He had only an instant to look at it before it was gone, twisting between the bars of the portcullis and racing across the surface of the water. But that instant was long enough. He knew that shadow, as he knew the man who'd cast it.
John. The call came drifting through the black of night. John pushed himself onto an elbow, his hand reaching for Longclaw by force of habit as the camp began to stir. The horn that wakes the sleepers, he thought. The long, low note lingered at the edge of hearing. The sentries at the ring wall stood still in their footsteps, breath frosting and heads turned towards the west. As the sound of the horn faded, even the wind ceased to blow. Men rolled from their blankets and reached for spears and sword belts, moving quietly, listening. A horse whickered and was hushed. For a heartbeat, it seemed as if the whole forest were holding its breath. The brothers of the night's watch waited for a second blast, praying they should not hear it, fearing that they would. When the silence had stretched unbearably long, and the men knew at last that the horn would not wind again, they grinned at one another sheepishly, as if to deny that they had been anxious. John Snow fed a few sticks to the fire, buckled on his sword belt, pulled on his boots, shook the dirt and dew from his cloak, and fastened it around his shoulders. The flames blazed up beside him, welcome heat beating against his face as he dressed. He could hear the Lord Commander moving inside the tent. After a moment, Mormont lifted the flap. "One blast?" On his shoulder, his raven sat fluffed and silent, looking miserable. "One, my lord," John agreed. "Brother's returning." Mormont moved to the fire. "The half-hand, and past time." He had grown more restive every day they waited. Much longer, and he would have been fit to whelp cubs. "See that there's hot food for the men, and fodder for the horses. I'll see Corrin at once."
"I'll bring him, my lord." The men from the Shadow Tower had been expected days ago. When they had not appeared, the brothers had begun to wonder. John had heard gloomy mutterings around the cook fire, and not just from Dolorous Ed. Sir Otten Withers was for retreating to Castle Black as soon as possible. Sir Malador Locke would strike for the Shadow Tower, hoping to pick up Corrin's trail and learn what had befallen him. And Thorin Smallwood
wanted to push on into the mountains. Mance Raider knows he must battle the Watch, Thorin had declared, but he will never look for us so far north. If we ride up the Milkwater, we can take him unawares and cut his host to ribbons before he knows we are on him.
The numbers would be greatly against us, Sir Otten had objected. Craster said he was gathering a great host, many thousands. Without Corrin, we are only 200.
Send 200 wolves against 10,000 sheep, sir, and see what happens, said Smallwood confidently.
There are goats among these sheep, Thorin, warned Jarman Buckwell. Aye, and maybe a few lions. Rattleshirt, Harmer, the Dog's Head, Elfin Crow Killer.
I know them as well as you do, Buckwell, Thorin Smallwood snapped back, and I mean to have their heads, every one. These are wildlings, no soldiers, a few hundred heroes, drunk most like, amidst a great horde of women, children, and thralls. We will sweep over them and send them howling back to their ovals. They argued for many hours and reached no agreement. The old bear was too stubborn to retreat, but neither would he rush headlong up the Milkwater, seeking battle. In the end, nothing had been decided but to wait a few more days for the men from the Shadow Tower and talk again if they did not appear. And now they had, which meant that the decision could be delayed no longer. John was glad for that much at least. If they must battle Mance Raider, let it be soon. He found Dolorous Ed at the fire complaining about how difficult it was for him to sleep when people insisted on blowing horns in the woods. John gave him something new to complain about. Together they woke Hake, who received the Lord Commander's orders with a stream of curses, but got up all the same, and soon had a dozen brothers cutting roots for a soup. Sam came puffing up as John crossed the camp. Under the black hood, his face was as pale and round as the moon.
I heard the horn. Has your uncle come back?
It's only the man from the Shadow Tower. It was growing harder to cling to the hope of Benjen Stark's safe return. The cloak he had found beneath the fist could well have belonged to his uncle or one of his men. Even the old bear admitted as much, though why they would have buried it there, wrapped around a cache of dragon glass, no one could say. Sam, I have to go. At the ring wall, he found the guards sliding spikes from the half-frozen earth to make an opening. It was not long until the first of the brothers from the Shadow Tower began wending their way up the slope. All in leather and fur they were, with here and there a bit of steel or bronze. Heavy beards covered hard, lean faces and made them look as shaggy as their garrons. John was surprised to see some of them were riding two to a horse. When he looked more closely, it was plain that many of them were wounded. There has been trouble on the way. John knew Corrin Halfhand the instant he saw him, though they had never met. The big ranger was half a legend in the Watch, a man of slow words and swift action, tall and straight as a spear, long-limbed and solemn. Unlike his men, he was clean-shaven. His hair fell from beneath his helm in a heavy braid touched with hoarfrost, and the blacks he wore were so faded that they might have been greys. Only thumb and forefinger remained on the hand that held the reins. The other fingers had been sheared off catching a wildling's axe that would otherwise have split his skull. It was told that he had thrust his maimed fist into the face of the axeman so the blood spurted into his eyes and slew him while he was blind. Since that day, the wildlings beyond the wall had known no foe more implacable. John hailed him. Lord Commander Mormont would see you at once. I'll show you to his tent. Corrin swung down from his saddle. My men are hungry, and our horses require tending. They'll all be seen to. The ranger gave his horse into the care of one of his men and followed. You are John Snow. You have your father's look. Did you know him, my lord? I'm no lordling, only a brother of the Night's Watch. I knew Lord Eddard, yes, and his father before him. John had to hurry his steps to keep up with Corrin's long strides. Lord Rickard died before I was born. He was a friend of the Watch. Corrin glanced behind. It is said that a direwolf runs with you. Ghost should be back by dawn. He hunts at night. They found Dolores Ed frying a rasher of bacon and boiling a dozen eggs in a kettle over the old bear's cook fire. Mormont sat in his wood and leather camp chair.
I'd begun to fear for you. Did you meet with trouble?
We met with Alfrin Crowkiller. Mance had sent him to scout along the wall, and we chanced on him returning. Corrin removed his helm. Alfrin will trouble the realm no longer, but some of his company escaped us. We hunted down as many as we could, but it may be that a few will win back to the mountains. And the cost? 4 brothers dead, 12 wounded. 1/3 as many as the foe. And we took captives. One died quickly from his wounds, but the other lived long enough to be questioned. Best talk of this inside. John will fetch you a horn of hail, or would you prefer hot spiced wine? Boiled water would suffice, an egg and a bite of bacon. As you wish. Mormont lifted the flap of the tent, and Corrin Halfhand stooped and stepped through. Ed stood over the kettle, swishing the eggs about with a spoon.
Cor, I envy those eggs, he said. I could do with a bit of boiling about now, eh? If the kettle were larger, I might jump in, eh? Though I would sooner it were wine than water, eh? There are worse ways to die than warm and drunk. I knew a brother drowned himself in wine once. It was a poor vintage, though, and his corpse did not improve it, eh?
You drank the wine?
It's an awful thing to find a brother dead, eh? You'd have need of a drink as well, Lord Snow.
Ed stirred the kettle and added a pinch more nutmeg. Restless, John squatted by the fire and poked at it with a stick. He could hear the old bear's voice inside the tent, punctuated by the raven's squawks and Corrin Halfhand's quieter tones, but he could not make out the words.
Alfin Crowkiller dead? That's good.
He was one of the bloodiest of the wildling raiders, taking his name from the black brothers he'd slain. So why does Corrin sound so grave after such a victory? John had hoped that the arrival of men from the Shadow Tower would lift the spirits in the camp. Only last night he was coming back through the dark from a piss when he heard 5 or 6 men talking in low voices around the embers of a fire. When he heard Chet muttering that it was past time they turned back, John stopped to listen. It's an old man's folly, this ranging, he heard. We'll find nothing but our graves in them mountains.
There's giants in the Frostfangs, and wargs, and worse things, said Lark the Sister Man. I'm not going there, I promise you. The old bear's not like to give you a choice.
Might be, we won't give him one, said Chet.
Just then one of the dogs had raised his head and growled, and he had to move away quickly before he was seen. I was not meant to hear that, he thought. He considered taking the tale to Mormont, but he could not bring himself to inform on his brothers, even brothers such as Chet and the Sister Man. It was just empty talk, he told himself. They are cold and afraid. We all are. It was hard waiting here, perched on the stony summit above the forest, wondering what the morrow might bring. The unseen enemy is always the most fearsome. John slid his new dagger from its sheath and studied the flames as they played against the shiny black glass. He had fashioned the wooden hilt himself and wound hempen twine around it to make a grip. Ugly, but it served. Dolores Ed opined that glass knives were about as useful as nipples on a knight's breastplate, but John was not so certain. The dragon glass blade was sharper than steel, albeit far more brittle. It must have been buried for a reason. He had made a dagger for Gren as well, and another for the Lord Commander. The war horn he had given to Sam. On closer examination, the horn had proved cracked, and even after it cleaned all the dirt out, John had been unable to get any sound from it. The rim was chipped as well, but Sam liked old things, even worthless old things. Make a drinking horn out of it, John told him, and every time you take a drink, you'll remember how you ranged beyond the wall all the way to the Fist of the First Men. He gave Sam a spearhead and a dozen arrowheads as well, and passed the rest out among his other friends for luck. The old bear had seemed pleased by the dagger, but he preferred a steel knife at his belt, John had noticed. Mormont could offer no answers as to who might have buried the cloak or what it might mean. Perhaps Corrin would know. The half-hand had ventured deeper into the wild than any other living man.
You want to serve, or shall I, eh?
John sheathed the dagger. I'll do it. He wanted to hear what they were saying. Ed cut 3 thick slices of a stale round of oat bread, stacked them on a wooden platter, covered them with bacon and bacon drippings, and filled a bowl with hard-cooked eggs. John took the bowl in one hand and the platter in the other and backed into the Lord Commander's tent. Corrin was seated cross-legged on the floor, his spine as straight as a spear. Candlelight flickered against the hard, flat planes of his cheeks as he spoke.
Rattleshirt, the Weeping Men, and every other chief, great and small, he was saying. They have wargs as well, and mammoths, and more strength than we would have dreamed, or so he claimed. I will not swear as to the truth of it. Eben believes the man was telling us tales to make his life last a little longer. True or false, the wall must be warned, the old bear said as John placed the platter between them. And the king? Which king? All of them, the true and the false alike. If they would claim the realm, let them defend it.
A half-hand helped himself to an egg and cracked it on the edge of the bowl. These kings will do what they will, he said, peeling away the shell. Likely it will be little enough. The best hope is Winterfell. The Starks must rally the north.
Yes, to be sure.
The old bear unrolled a map, frowned at it, tossed it aside, opened another. He was pondering where the hammer would fall. John could see it. The watch had once manned 17 castles along the 100 leagues of the wall, but they had been abandoned one by one as the Brotherhood dwindled. Only 3 were now garrisoned, a fact that Mance Rayder knew as well as they did.
Sir Alistair Thorne will bring back fresh levies from King's Landing, we can hope. If we man Greyguard from the Shadow Tower and the Long Barrow from Eastwatch.
Greyguard has largely collapsed. Stone Door would serve better if the men could be found. Icemark and Deep Lake as well, mayhaps, with daily patrols along the battlements between.
Patrols, aye, and twice a day if we can. The wall itself is a formidable obstacle. Undefended, it cannot stop them, yet it will delay them. The larger the host, the longer they'll require. From the emptiness they've left behind, they must mean to bring their women with them. They're young as well, and beasts. Have you ever seen a goat climb a ladder? A rope? They will need to build a stair or a great ramp. It will take a moon's turn at the least, perhaps longer. Mance will know his best chance is to pass beneath the wall, through a gate or a breach.
Mormont's head came up sharply.
What?
They do not plan to climb the wall, nor to burrow beneath it, my lord. They plan to break it.
The wall is 700 feet high, and so thick at the base that it would take 100 men a year to cut through it with picks and axes.
Even so, Mormont plucked at his beard, frowning.
How? How else? Sorcery.
Corrin bit the egg in half. Why else would Mance choose to gather his strength in the Frostfangs? Bleak and hard they are, and a long, weary march from the wall.
I'd hoped he'd chose the mountains to hide his muster from the eyes of my rangers.
Perhaps, said Corrin, finishing the egg, but there is more, I think. He is seeking something in the high, cold places. He is searching for something he needs.
Something?
Mormont's raven lifted its head and screamed. The sound was sharp as a knife in the closeness of the tent.
Some power. What it is, our captive could not say. He was questioned perhaps too sharply and died with much unsaid. I doubt he knew in any case.
John could hear the wind outside. It made a high, thin sound as it shivered through the stones of the ring wall and tugged at the tent ropes. Mormont rubbed his mouth thoughtfully.
Some power, he repeated. I must know.
Then you must send scouts into the mountains.
I'm loath to risk more men. We can only die. Why else do we don these black cloaks but to die in defense of the realm?
I would send 15 men in 3 parties of 5, one to probe the Miltwater, one the Skirling Pass, one to climb the Giant Stair. Jarman Buckwell, Thorin Smallwater, and myself to command, to learn what waits in those mountains.
Waits?
The raven cried.
Waits?
Lord Commander Mormont sighed deep in his chest.
I see no other choice, he conceded. But if you do not return?
Someone will come down out of the Frostfangs, my lord, the ranger said. If us, all well and good. If not, it will be Mance Rayder, and you sit square in his path. He cannot march south and leave you behind to follow and harry his rear. He must attack. This is a strong place.
Not that strong, said Mormont.
Belike we shall all die then. Our dying will buy time for our brothers on the wall. Time to garrison the empty castles and free shut the gates. Time to summon lords and kings to their aid. Time to hone their axes and repair their catapults. Our lives will be coin well spent.
Die,
the raven muttered, pacing along Mormont's shoulders.
Die, 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 die.
The old bear sat slumped and silent, as if the burden of speech had grown too heavy for him to bear. But at last he said,
May the gods forgive me. Choose your men.
Corrin Halfhand turned his head. His eyes met John's and held them for a long moment.
Very well. I choose Jon Snow.
Mormont blinked.
He is hardly more than a boy, and my steward besides, not even a ranger.
Tullet can care for you as well, my lord. Corrin lifted his maimed, two-fingered hand. The old guards are still strong beyond the wall. The guards of the First Men and the Starks. Mormont looked at John.
What is your will in this?
To go, he said at once. The old man smiled sadly.
I thought it might be.
Dawn had broken when John stepped from the tent beside Corrin Halfhand. The wind swirled around them, stirring their black cloaks and sending a scatter of red cinders flying from the fire.
We ride at noon, the ranger told him. Best find that wolf of yours.
Tyrion. The queen intends to send Prince Tommen away. They knelt alone in the hushed dimness of the sept, surrounded by shadows and flickering candles, but even so Lancel kept his voice low.
Lord Giles will take him to Rosby and conceal him there in the guise of a page. They plan to darken his hair and tell everyone that he is the son of a hedge knight.
Is it the mob she fears, or me?
Both, said Lancel.
Ah, Tyrion had known nothing of this ploy. Had Varys' little birds failed him for once? Even spiders must nod, he supposed. Or was the eunuch playing a deeper and more subtle game than he knew?
You have my thanks, sir.
Will you grant me the boon I asked of you?
Perhaps.
Lancel wanted his own command in the next battle. A splendid way to die before he finished growing that moustache, but young knights always think themselves invincible. Tyrion lingered after his cousin had slipped away. At the warrior's altar, he used one candle to light another.
Watch over my brother, you bloody bastard. He's one of yours.
He lit a second candle to the stranger, for himself. That night, when the Red Keep was dark, Bronn arrived to find him sealing a letter.
Take this to Sir Jaslyn Bywater.
The dwarf dribbled hot golden wax down onto the parchment.
What does it say?
Bronn could not read, so he asked impudent questions.
That he's to take 50 of his best swords and scout the Rose Road.
Tyrion pressed his seal into the soft wax.
Stannis is more like to come up the King's Road.
Oh, I know.
Tell Bywater to disregard what's in the letter and take his men north. He's to lay a trap along the Rosby Road.
Lord Giles will depart for his castle in a day or two, with a dozen men-at-arms, some servants, and my nephew. Prince Tommen may be dressed as a page. You want the boy brought back, is that it? No, I want...